The AA thing was somewhat compatible with Finnegan in that we're both trying to do the same thing, and that is clean up the environment. And in the same period, I was co-founder of the OIML. It's an organization that stands for Organization Internationale Metrologie Legale, and it's legal metrology.
Mm-hmm.
And we, in the U.S., it was something that was, I'd say, sort of sponsored, guided by the National Bureau of Standards.
Okay.
And worked, we had sort of coordination by NBS, and we wound up writing the regulations, proposing and ultimately getting passed regulations international for 51 nations in the world that were really the EPA, they were the EPA regulations, if you really get right down to it, in instrumentation.
Mm-hmm.
In particular, we wound up proposing to 51 nations that, you know, for instance, that they use GCMS for organic pollutant analysis, that they use IR and other methods, UV and so on, for other measurements, and wound up sort of getting all the nations in the Western world to adopt the same standards as
right.
we had in the U.S. is really what it turned out, and
mm-hmm.
we didn't put it that way, but it's the way it worked out. But I spent 7 years, I think, as chairman of that group, and making trips to Europe and various places to get other countries to go along with what we're doing here.
Did did your experience with developing and working hard on this, well, your interactions with the EPA and working hard to create this environmental market for GCMS, was environmental science something that you had exposure to prior to that, and did that experience have an change your thoughts about develop your thoughts about the environment or things of that nature? I mean, you were heavy into this early EPA world pretty
yeah.
intensely.
Yeah, it did. And, you know, that, for instance, at AEA, you know, my job was to convince other, you know, companies, electronics companies,
right.
semiconductor companies, to become good citizens. And someone like Hewlett-Packard and IBM were already good citizens and were, you know, helping and providing people and, you know, in every way they could, helping to clean up the valley, you know,
mm-hmm.
or wherever they happen to be. And both those companies were included among those that were contaminating the environment,
mm-hmm.
but were not aware of it. But once they became aware of it and using modern instrumentation, you know, could become aware of it, they were eager to you know, correct the
right.
damage. And I would say, in wearing the AEA hat, you know, I was not interested, per se, you know, trying to sell anybody instruments or
mm-hmm.
whatever, but I was very interested in having them, you know, stop polluting. And I had already worked with a lot of petrochemical companies who generally had a good conscience, like Monsanto
mm-hmm.
would be a good example, a real leader in, you know, being a good citizen and showing, you know, leadership in their industry and cleaning up the environment and stopping the pollution.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had, I was really imbued, you know, with, you know, doing that with our companies in AEA.
Right.
And we established regional AEA offices that we would visit and you know, try to get across the same spirit of let's clean up our act.
Mm-hmm.
We did a pretty good job, in fact. And we would often have EPA administrators, local or national, as guests to help, you know, to help get the message through. And I think AA wound up really doing that job very, very well. And my own goals were to, you know, to help as much as I could in that area, and helping to write regulations for EPA that, you know, didn't have any bearing, at least direct bearing on instruments we would sell, but would wind up, you know, with double walled tanks that wouldn't pollute the water in this valley or any other valley.
Right. Great.
It was fun to do that.
Yeah. Let's see. Well, I guess let's see, just trying to think, prioritizing the questions we have time for. There's a big acquisition by Finnegan of MAT in 81. And then, is it in 82 that you have a position change for yourself personally? Is that, or?
Not really.
Yeah.
I don't think, I always was just doing the same things.
Right.
Whatever I was called, and I, you know, I had every job in the company at one time or another. But we acquired MAT in 81 from Varian.
Right.
And they were a real dog. I mean, you know, in terms of they were not doing well financially.
Okay.
And it was a real burden for us. And we had been a company with profits going like this, and they had a huge loss at the time we bought them, and they continued to have it. And for a number of years, and in fact, most of the time we owned them, I don't think they ever made a profit before Thermo bought Finnegan.
Okay.
And it probably had a lot to do with the ultimate financial outcome for Finnegan, that we couldn't show a good profit after we acquired MAT. And they were a very good technical group, and today are making a really good profit and probably, you know, own a large, by far the lion's share of the isotope ratio mass spec market, and you know, are doing very, very well. But during the period we had them, BG was a major competitor to them, and BG was eating their lunch. Had just taken almost all the salesmen from Varian, joined BG before we bought MAT, or about the time we bought them. And so that was a huge drag on the company in terms of management time, in terms of you know, trying to extend our culture to them, and, you know, become more flexible, instead of, you know, very often the German way is different than the U.S. way in terms of entrepreneurialism.
Mm-hmm.
And so on. And so it was, that was a difficult period. And in that period, we brought in John Hearn as the vice president, first of manufacturing, and then vice president, I think, of operations for San mm-hmm. Jose operations. And then as overall, he was, I think we ultimately, somewhere in the mid-80s, made John VP of operations for both Brayman and San Jose.
Okay.
And TZ gave up some of his own, you know, general manager role to John, and for a while that worked out. And I'd say subsequently it didn't come out as well. But I would just say that we inherited a lot of problems, and I think as opposed to having, you know, our having a goal of like environmental, dominating mm-hmm. the environmental market, which mm-hmm. we did. Mm-hmm. At the time we bought Bremen, we probably owned 85% of the environmental market. I would say by 1990, when we sold to Thermo, we were a lot less than that, and probably at the same level as HP or maybe less than HP. Mm. And so we really are, even though our horizons included magnetic and isotope ratio, it was a market dominated at that time by VG, and both in terms of sales and profits. Mm. My role, I would say, didn't change all that much. I continued to, I had various titles, but.
I guess 82 there was a title change, that's yeah, why I was.
I think I might have, I at times, and I can't remember all the times, but I was president of, for Finnegan Instruments Division, I was president or chairman of the board of international, some of the international operations in this mm-hmm. month, but mm-hmm. essentially I was doing the same job that I always did, and it was sort of, I was the chief strategic officer for the company
right.
from day one till day, you know, end. And I was, and I would say I shared it with Roger Sand at times, with TZ and Roger, mm-hmm. with TZ, but ultimately I was the person, you know, accountable mm-hmm. for that role of chief strategic officer.
Right.
TZ was chief executive officer from the day he joined us until we were acquired, and we had various other people, you know, in other roles, and we had titles that varied along
right.
the way.
And was it, was 1990 and the acquisition by Thermo Instruments, did that mark, you know, was that sort of the end of your real active involvement with the company, or so intensely?
So intensely, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was, at that point, I was working for Arvin Smith,
right.
who was the president of Thermo Instruments, who was the acquiring company,
mm-hmm.
and I did work some for George Hatsopoulos, the president of Thermo Electron, who was the boss
right.
of Arvin.
Smith.
He was over the whole thing. But in terms of day-to-day, it did sort of terminate my, you know, huge involvement day to day, minute to minute. But I stayed involved, I think, for about a year. I think I never formally retired,
mm-hmm.
haven't yet. And I stayed as, I actually defined a job for me as a consultant for Thermo Instruments and Finnegan
mm-hmm.
in 1991, I think, that probably took effect in around January 92, and I worked basically one day a week for Thermo from that time on, and for Arvin, and I would say some of it with Finnegan, but not all that much, and
okay.
and so my involvement was usually more on an individual basis with, for instance, the person who's currently president, Ian Jardin. I'd help to bring him in, and he and I, he was marketing manager, and we would argue some days, I mean, we would discuss, you know, marketing issues and till late at night, you know, and so I would get in on certain things and
right.
but tried not to interfere in the operations of the company, which Rick Chapman was brought in as president of Finnegan subsidiary and
right.
What became ThermoQuest for a while, and then was changed back to Thermo Finnegan again. And but I was there. I moved my office into the middle of R&D, and basically at the invitation of R&D people, And that's where I sat when I went into the company, and I interacted with them, and I tried not to get involved in the operational end of things.
Right. And that consulting that you were doing for Thermo Instruments then and Thermo, full stop.
Yeah, Thermo-Electron.
Thermo-Electron, sorry.
Yeah.
Was that in the vein of strategic consulting for them, or?
Yeah, I was on things like they had a detector for explosives.
Mm-hmm.
It used chemiluminescent detection.
Okay.
And that thermal detection, they call it now, I think it was called thermal detection then, and they were predicting, you know, multi-billion-dollar markets or something, really huge markets. And the president of the company, George Hatsopoulos, asked me if I would look at it, and I think they were predicting 1,500 units a year of this product they had. It cost about $200,000. And I spent about, you know, maybe 2 months looking at that market and visiting some of the people and so on. And I came in with a number of 15 units over 3 years, and they were talking probably 5,000 units over 3 years, and they actually sold 12. And he was looking at, should he make a huge investment, and I think he did not make that investment, but they did continue to develop the product, but no one ever bought it.
Mm.
But I helped out and things like that, and some of them in-house, and some of them were companies that they're looking at, or, you know, that Arvin was considering hiring. But most of that, I would say, I was very peripheral and not really challenged all that much. And he was not here, and I didn't want to, I was not interested in moving. Hatsopoulos asked me to move to Boston,
mm-hmm.
or East Coast, and take over his job, which the part of his job that he actually enjoyed very much, but didn't have time to do anymore. And that was sort of the working with the politicians in Washington,
mm-hmm.
and working, you know, on new product kind of things, and helping figure out where to build it at Thermo. And,
right.
But a lot of it was just plain rubbing elbows with the politicians. And at AEA, I had really done a lot of that. I had visited, you know, probably 20 senators or some large number,
mm-hmm.
and representing AEA.
Right.
And many congressmen, and someone like Normanetta, was very close friend, still is, and who was writing the legislation for water.
Right.
And we were basically providing him all the material that he ultimately got put into the EPA regulations.
Mm-hmm.
But so Hatsopoulos wanted me to do that and work directly for him, and I didn't want to move. And, I mean, I didn't even, it was not a, I mean, yeah, I just said I didn't, that wasn't in the cards for me.
And have you, since, you know, since the early 90s, was that the period of time, or did it even begin earlier when you began to sit on the boards of other companies and you know, continue entrepreneurial stuff? I don't know how to describe it.
Yeah, that's
it.
A very good point. You did a good job. Yes, that's a. I was. I think I went on. I went to work for Hembert and Quist, the investment banker, starting in, I think it was 88,
mm-hmm.
and they were starting up an environmental technology fund.
Oh.
And asked me to be an advisor to it, which is quite an honor. And they were also our investment banker, and so there's a potential conflict. And so I basically asked our board, you know, what I said I would like to do it if the board approves of it. But I said if there's a single dissent dissenting vote, I'm not going to do it. And there weren't. So I did do that, starting, I think, in 88, and through maybe last year.
Mm.
And I worked with various people at H&Q in the city. But in 1990, I did, each time I would ask Arvin Smith to, I'd talk about it and see what he thought. I was asked in various boards, and someone like Dionics, mm-hmm. I turned down because it was a potential competitor, and I don't think they wanted, in some cases, the people who were asking, I just told them no. If it was anything competitive with Finnegan, I didn't want any part of it.
Right.
And I didn't, whether I was going to be active at Finnegan or not, I was not interested. And I have to say, I was asked, I guess Waters asked me on their board, mm-hmm. and they'd all deny it if you were to ask them. But I turned down the ones that looked like competitors, and BG was ultimately became part of Waters, and I could sort of see that one coming. So I went on the board with small companies that were entrepreneurial, where I thought, my skills maybe were more apropos, and I think I was on five boards at the peak, and I'm on two right now, and one of them is here in the Valley. It's a group from Stanford University,
mm-hmm.
Chemistry department, and it's a fun thing.
Have you enjoyed that role of serving on this?
Yeah, I think I've in some of them, some of them are where they're really, good people. It's really enjoyable, and some of them, they're not. So, they're not as entrepreneurial. East Coast people, and I don't want to generalize, but the board I'm on back there, Strategic Diagnostics, is the name of the company, and they're a DuPont group, and
mm-hmm.
I think I've been helpful, probably more helpful to them than to anyone else, because I'm such a radical by comparison. And they're all conservative, and they were originally doing immunoassay analysis of pollutants,
mm-hmm.
And fairly inexpensively, and currently doing a lot of looking for GMOs in corn and soybean,
right.
Like that. But a lot of my experience with EPA was helpful to them. I could introduce them to people at EPA who were the right people, and I could also sort of help them to avoid some of the pitfalls that we had encountered. And I would say it's been fun for the most part. The people on the boards have been real fun, guys like Ricardo Pellucci.
Right.
And there's a lot of Dave Nelson,
mm-hmm.
Who's getting the award
right.
this year. And so I met just really good people. And so that, overall, that's been fun. And we sold one of the companies to Hewlett Packard, and the company that I thought was the poorest, not the poorest necessarily, but let's say had the least chance of succeeding. And they were making a field GC, a portable. And,
mm-hmm.
and I think ultimately they were going not very far. And so we sold the company at a good price to Hewlett Packard, who I think are doing well with it.
Well, I, believe it or not, have come to the end of my long list of questions. So if there's anything that you have the energy left to mention that I didn't ask, or any other thoughts you wanted to include, we can talk about those now, or so it's up to you.
Uh-huh. I think, one thing of, that might be of interest,
yeah.
The whole concept of being acquired, when you have a company you've mm-hmm. grown from zero to say, 130 million and with prospects
right.
Of going further, and, when do you say, when do you give it up, or when do you...
Yeah, that's right. I didn't ask about that whole sequence leading up to 1990.
Right.
Thank you.
I think that we we were running more and more into a situation where we saw companies being acquired, you know, a lot of companies in the analytical instrument business mm-hmm. being acquired, and Thermo doing a lot of it, and where it becomes harder and harder to compete where you're a one-product company. And we were basically one-product company, and where your margin for error becomes less and less, and as you become bigger, you need a different management than when you were smaller. And
right.
And you know, for instance, I think the management that we had was very capable with TZ and me
mm-hmm.
of taking the company to $100 million and maybe, you know, a little over, but we needed somebody, you know, more experienced, and in going from 100 million or whatever to 500 million or a mm-hmm. billion is a pretty big step, and the, you know, the stakes get higher the whole time, and you can't make very many mistakes
mm-hmm.
and survive. And I would just say I felt that we needed partnerships. You know, and it might be an acquisition. We either needed somebody, some person, and I won't say a Jack Welch,
mm-hmm.
but somebody who's a bigger dimension than either TZ or I were to take it the next step. And I think TZ may or may not have agreed with me. I think he agreed that we needed somebody but didn't feel the same urgency
mm-hmm.
that I felt, that's a fact of life and you never know whether you're right or wrong, you know, and the value currently assigned to Finnegan, Thermo Finnegan, is many times what it was when we sold it to Thermo, and it's hard to say whether we would have done better or would have done worse.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, but I guess my feeling was we needed a whole new management, you know, structure and person
mm-hmm.
to make that change. And so that was my reason for feeling that it was time to either be acquired or to, if we could find that person, that would obviously be a good road to go. But whether you could do it with one product is hard to say, and I just don't know if anyone could ever say for sure. But there's been a lot of consolidation in the industry,
sure has.
Not just our industry, but certainly in
general.
Yeah. And profits are the name of the game, and the first thing Thermo did when they acquired it was to cut back on research from 12% to 6% or something mm-hmm. like that, which gives an immediate bounce to the profits, but long term doesn't help. And so products, for instance, like the triple quad, we had at the time I left the company, we owned 90% of the market for triple stage quadruple
right.
MS, and you know, I'd say at least 90%. And today, Finnegan owns about 5% of it,
mm.
and that turned out to be an opening for ABI.
Mm-hmm.
It was Perkinamer Sciex,
right.
NVG, who came in and ate Finnegan's lunch in the triple quad, which was, when we left, was our most profitable product line.
Mm.
And so some things have not done so well, and that was mostly in the pharmaceutical industry.
Right.
So it's a very profitable product area. But the whole thing of when do you call it quits is sort of a hard one to you know.
Yeah, and to be analytical, you know, to get some distance on that decision and be somewhat analytic about that.
Right.
I mean, I can't imagine that must be very difficult too, because you've really poured your heart and soul into
right.
this thing, and it's been your
baby.
Yeah, and
But I have to say, in all honesty, and maybe it's a good place to end, that I had more fun in the last 11 years than I ever had. Because, you know, working with small companies, I've been able to do, and I'm good at that, and I'm helpful to the companies. I've had enough financial freedom and investment with Kleiner Perkins and so on to financially, you know, be able to do whatever we want to do and get to, you know, spend more time with the family, doing things I want to do. And I've consulted for various companies, including Kleiner Perkins and Ryan and other companies where, you know, I've enjoyed, you know, the new challenges. And I think there comes a time when it's better to turn it over to somebody else. And I currently, for instance, I wanted to turn it over to Ian Jardine. And at the time I was leaving, and spent a lot of hours with Arvin Smith saying that Ian, who was a scientist background, a chemist, PhD chemist, from he's from Mayo Medical Clinic. Mm-hmm.